Hey everyone, Craig Baird here. Before I begin today's story, I want to take a moment and ask that you check me out on Patreon at www.patreon.com/CanadaEHX. There are several tiers with great benefits, from ad-free content to t-shirts and other cool stuff.
And I have plenty of wonderful merch in my store, and the link is in my show notes.
As well, if you're a fan of Canadian history, make sure you check out all of my shows, from John to Justin, Canadian History X, Canada, A Yearly Journey, and Pucks and Cups, along with Canada's Great War. And don't forget, you can also donate directly to the show at www.canadaehx.com. Just click donate. It helps keep this show going. Okay, on with the show. I'm Craig Baird, and this is Canada's Great War. The story of the Battle of Hill 70, fought in August 1917, is a notable one because it represents the first time that the Canadian Corps fought under a Canadian commander. That commander was the subject of last week's episode, Sir Arthur Currie. Currie had taken command of the Corps in June 1917 after Vimy Ridge had been fought. He replaced General Julian Byng, becoming the first Canadian to oversee the Canadians' fighting on the Western Front. And almost as soon as he took command, he received orders to capture the French city of Lens. It was the hope that the Canadians would divert the German military resources from the battle raging at Passchendaele. General Henry Horne told Currie to inflict mass casualties on the Germans through raids, bombardments, and gas attacks to give the impression a major attack was coming. Located not far from Vimy Ridge, Lens was a coal mining city, and it had suffered badly throughout the First World War. Half the city was in ruins by the time the Canadians were tasked with taking it. Looking at the area around Lens, believed that Hill 70 was the most important location strategically. Its name simply came from the fact that it was 70 meters above sea level. Currie believed, rightly, that a frontal assault on Lens and an occupation of the city was useless if the Germans could just shoot at the Canadians from the hills. As a result, Currie convinced the commanders to change the battle plan and to make Hill 70 the main objective for the Canadian troops. Once he had approval, he began planning for weeks to take the hill. The attack would involve the 1st, 2nd, and 4th Canadian Divisions taking part in the attack, while the 3rd Canadian Division was in reserve. The 1st and 2nd Divisions were to attack on the front along a 3.7-kilometer line and capture the defensive positions of the Germans on the slope of Hill 70. The 3rd Infantry Brigade of the 1st Canadian Division would attack north of Hill 70, and the 2nd Canadian Infantry Brigade would attack the summit. Meanwhile, the 4th and 5th Brigades of the 2nd Division would attack the ruins of the suburbs south of the hill. The plan was for 204 18-pounders and 48 4.5-inch howitzers to fire a creeping barrage at the Germans. In the air, the Royal Flying Corps would do high patrols over the battlefield and scout out positions of Germans on the hill. The plan was originally to have the battle take place at the end of July, but weather conditions delayed the capture of the hill and Lens until mid-August. The extra time gave the Canadians more preparation time before the battle. This included wire cutting, destroying German artillery positions, and gas shelling. In all, 40 of 102 German batteries were destroyed in this time. Then, on August 15, 1917 at 4:25 a.m., the Canadian Corps launched their attack on Hill 70, heading out from their jumping-off points. Things began with the Royal Engineers firing drums of burning oil into the German positions on the hill. This was followed by heavy artillery fire to create a creeping barrage, moving at 91-meter increments in front of the troops. The 4th Division conducted a simulated attack in front of Lens as a diversion for the 1st and 2nd Divisions that were advancing up the hill. After 20 minutes, the Canadian infantry had progressed 549 meters and paused to dig in, and then advanced to their next objective at 6 a.m. One stretcher-bearer named Watson said, "At 4:20 a.m., you'd have thought the earth had cracked open. My God, it was marvelous. I don't know how many guns we have. Some say one to every three men. With the first roar, we manned the trench and began to move. No power on earth could keep us from getting on the parapet to have a look." With their position on the hill, the Germans were able to see the attack coming, and they hunkered down with defensive fire. An unnamed soldier with the 5th wrote, "The whole area was heavily strafed with every sort of shell in the Huns' repertoire." The burning oil created a smoke screen that allowed the Canadians to capture several early goals by 6 a.m. that day. And as the Canadians moved up the hill, the Germans increased their defensive attack. The four attacking Canadian brigades began to consolidate as they reached their various objectives. And as the morning went on, a smokescreen began to drift away, giving the Germans a clear view of the Canadians. At this point, the machine guns of the Germans inflicted heavy casualties on the Canadians, and many soldiers ran from shell hole to shell hole as they advanced up the hill. A war correspondent said, "I saw a great spread of gunfire in the early morning after the thin crescent moon had faded and when there was a gray mist lying over the city and fields." With each steady advance up the hill, the Canadians captured German machine gun posts. To help the Canadians, Curry ordered 200 gas bombs fired into the German positions south of Lens as a diversion during the assault on Hill 70. Between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. on August 15th, the Germans executed four local attacks against the Canadian positions. Each attack was pushed back thanks to the forward artillery, who had a clear view of the German positions. At least one attack made it through to the Canadians, resulting in hand-to-hand fighting. The Canadians had taken Hill 70, but the attack on Lens continued. One brigadier general stated, "I wish to report that the fighting which took place from the crest of Hill 70 forward on this brigade frontage was the fiercest and most bitter which the battalions of this brigade have experienced or ever seen." Back home, the Montreal Gazette reported, "Save in the hard struggle on the east of Hill 70, our losses have been relatively small when the far-reaching effect of the victory gained is taken into account. A very large proportion of those hit have shrapnel wounds that are not serious." A war correspondent wrote in a wire to Canada, "A fair number of prisoners have been taken, and some of the enemy troops were seen running away from the wreckage of the houses in the suburbs of Lens as soon as Hill 70 was taken." Back in Canada, the victory was plastered across the front pages. The Vancouver Daily World wrote, "The capture of Hill 70 ranks in importance with the biggest military operations of this year. It was the last dominating position in this section which remained in the hands of the Germans, and from it, a wide territory can be controlled." On August 16th at 9 a.m., the Germans began to counterattack to regain positions on the hill, but the Canadians were able to repel them each time. The Germans were said to be met with fountains of earth sent up by the heavy shells and a hail of shrapnel and machine gun bullets. The 2nd Canadian Infantry Brigade relieved the attacking battalions with the 5th and 10th Canadian Battalions that morning. The Germans then launched a major counterattack at 7:15 p.m., which resulted in hand-to-hand combat once again. The 5th Brigade eventually retired from the final objective due to shell holes being short of ammunition and suffering major casualties. The 2nd Brigade suffered 249 men killed, 1,177 men wounded, and 225 men missing. On August 17th, the 4th and 11th Infantry Brigades attempted to eliminate German positions but failed as the German counterattacks continued against the Canadians. And as the Canadians approached closer to capture the hill, the Germans launched 15,000 to 20,000 of their Yellow Cross gas shells which contained sulfur mustard. The 1st and 2nd Canadian Artillery Field Brigades in the Canadian front lines were hit by the gas. The 1st Canadian Division suffered 183 casualties in these counterattacks. Through the night of August 17th and 18th, the Germans attempted to recapture the Chalk Quarry and Chicory Trench using the cover of the gas, but these failed as the Canadians pushed back the attempts. At one point, German troops used flamethrowers to push into the Canadian lines, but they were driven back. For the next 2 days, things were quiet as both sides consolidated their lines. The front line was drawn back 270 meters, halfway between their intermediate and final objectives. In the morning of August 21st, the 6th Canadian Infantry Brigade and the 10th Canadian Infantry Brigade attacked at 4:35 a.m., but the Germans were ready, beginning their shelling at 4 a.m. The 6th Brigade met the German 4th Guard Division, resulting in hand-to-hand combat. The brigade was pushed back in the attack, and communication between the forward units and brigade headquarters had broken down. One soldier wrote home, "Our grand old battalion carried themselves in the same steady, daring manner that they have done in every action." The 10th Canadian Infantry Brigade suffered heavy casualties from German artillery while keeping ready to attack. Only three small parties reached their goal. The attack officially ended on August 25th, and while the Germans still held Lens, it was seen as a huge success for the taking of Hill 70. And even though the Germans still held Lens, it was still a terrible battle for them. One German wrote home, "It is growing always more miserable here. No outlook for peace." Sir Arthur Currie sent a letter to Captain J. H. Burnham, a Member of Parliament, stating, I know you will rejoice with me over the recent success of our Corps. The fighting for Hill 70 was the hardest and most successful in which we have ever been engaged. The cost of the battle was extremely high. The 1st Canadian Division suffered 881 dead and 3,035 total casualties, while the 2nd Canadian Division had 763 men dead, 2,724 total casualties. The 4th Canadian Division had 381 dead and 1,432 total casualties. But total casualty counts vary, it should be noted. The attack on Hill 70 resulted in 3,527 casualties, while the total battle and the attacks on Lens resulted in 5,671 casualties. In all, nearly 10,000 men were listed as casualties over the course of 11 days, and of those, 1,300 have no known grave. There is another cost that is often overlooked, the financial cost. The shelling alone of Hill 70 resulted in $3 million, or $62 million today. In all, an estimated 140,000 shells were used. General Haig wrote in his diary on August 15th, after Hill 70 was taken, that it was an unqualified success. But Hill 70 is overshadowed by Vimy Ridge and Passchendaele, but historians consider it to be the most important battle fought by the Canadians during the First World War.
At the start line of their attack, 100 years later, fellow Canadians, back to rouse lost history. Among them, Liliane Vena. Her grandfather is Corporal Philip Canaval, the only Ukrainian-Canadian ever awarded a Victoria Cross for his single-handed bravery in the Battle of Hill 70. In a ceremony today, he and the battle lent their names to a memorial just open to the public.
He did all that, poor man, this poor soldier, and he was finally recognized. And that means a lot to me, you know, it's overwhelming.
Public recognition of the Hill 70 Battle of World War I has been slow in coming. A Canadian-led offensive that over 10 days wrested the strategic hill 70 meters above sea level from German forces and held it despite 21 counterattacks. The idea and its success credited to the better-known Lieutenant General Arthur Currie. But nearly 1,900 soldiers died, buried in several cemeteries here, many never identified. Their war stories, 4 months and 15 kilometers from Vimy Ridge, eclipsed by others of the Great War.
Hill 70 deserves to be remembered. The government may have forgotten. There is no monument. There was no monument here. That's why we had to put one up.
It was volunteers and private donors led by Hutchings who ultimately made it happen. No money from the Canadian government. The town of Lens-en-Goël donated the land.
Ça compte beaucoup.
Its mayor says here, too, the battle is little known. Personal connections brought many Canadians here, including the commander of the Canadian Army, whose grandfather fought in and survived Hill 70.
It's long overdue, and that's why I'm so pleased to see this, because I consider this personally one of the biggest battles of the First World War. It ranks with Vimy and the last 100 days.
The pathway up is now named after Philip Canaval, represented here by three later generations.
I've had people come up to me and they said they were honored to meet me, so I felt really good about that.
If the path is completed, it will eventually be embossed with 1,877 of those maple leaves, each representing a Canadian life lost and again remembered. Nal Ayed, CBC News, Lens-en-Goël, France.
Arthur Currie said of the battle, "It was altogether the hardest battle in which the Corps participated. It was a great and wonderful victory. General Headquarters regarded as one of the finest performances of the war." The battle ensured a diversion of German resources and it boosted the pride of Canada on the world stage. And it also made legends out of several soldiers. One was Lancelot Joseph Bertrand. Born in Grenada, he was one of the first black volunteers in the Canadian Expeditionary Force. Enlisting in September 1914, he served in many battles, including the Battle of Festubert, where he was wounded. In 1916, he was promoted to sergeant and then to lieutenant, becoming one of only seven black officers in the Canadian Expeditionary Force. At Vimy Ridge, his bravery earned him the Military Cross. but he was killed on August 15, 1917, during the attack on Hill 70. During the battle, five Canadians received the Victoria Cross. Private Michael O'Rourke was an Irish-born Canadian soldier who served as a stretcher-bearer. Already honored with the Military Medal for his heroism during the Battle of the Somme, he would earn the Victoria Cross for his actions at Hill 70. Over the course of 3 days and three nights, he gathered the wounded, dressed their wounds, gave them food and water, and went back to find more wounded soldiers. Through all of this, he was fired upon and nearly killed many times by enemy shells, but his actions saved many lives during the battle. Phil Konawal was born in Austria-Hungary and came to Canada in 1913. On July 12, 1915, he enlisted with the 77th Canadian Infantry Battalion and left for Europe in June of 1916. In April 1917, he took part in the Battle of Vimy Ridge, and from August 22 to 24, 1917, he fought at the Battle of Hill 70. During that time, he bayoneted three Germans in a cellar, followed by attacking seven others in a crater, killing them all. He also rushed a machine gun encampment, killed the crew, and brought the gun back to the Canadian lines. The next day, he attacked another machine gun encampment, killed the crew, and destroyed the gun. During his 3 days of fighting, he killed 16 Germans. His Victoria Cross was personally presented to him by King George V. Harry Brown was born in Ontario in 1898 and enlisted with the Canadian Mounted Rifles on August 18, 1916. On August 16, 1917, he was tasked with getting word back to headquarters of the position of the Canadians. The wires had been cut, and the only way to deliver the message was on foot. Brown and one other soldier were tasked with delivering the message at all costs. The other messenger was killed as they ran, and Brown had his arm shattered by a barrage. As he reached headquarters, he fell down the steps in exhaustion. When he came to, he delivered his message and then passed out. He died a few hours later at a dressing station. For his actions, he was awarded the Victoria Cross. Frederick Hobson was born in England but came to Canada in 1904. A Boer War veteran, he enlisted at 43 years old, the Canadian Expeditionary Force, becoming a sergeant in the 20th Battalion. On August 18, 1917, during a strong German counterattack, he rushed from his trench, dug out a Lewis machine gun that had been buried, and got it into action against the Germans who were attacking. The gun stopped firing when it jammed, and while he was wounded, he rushed at the Germans with his bayonet and single-handedly pushed the Germans back until he was killed with a rifle shot. By this point, the Lewis gun jam was cleared and was put back into action as the Germans were once again pushed back. He was awarded the Victoria Cross for his actions. Robert Hill Hanna was born in Ireland but came to Canada as a young man. In November 1914, he enlisted with the Canadian Expeditionary Force. On August 21, 1917, at Hill 70, he led a party of Canadians against a strong point, rushed the wire, and personally killed four Germans. He captured the position and silenced a machine gun that was killing Canadians. For his actions, he was presented with the Victoria Cross by King George V at Buckingham Palace. I hope you enjoyed this episode and our look at the Battle of Hill 70. Information from Canadian Encyclopedia, Canada War Museum, Veterans Affairs, Western Front Association, Wikipedia, Vimy Foundation, Montreal Gazette, Saskatoon Star Phoenix, and the North Bay Nugget. If this is your first time listening and you like what you heard, please take a moment and give us a 5-star review to help other people find these amazing stories. And there are so many you can sink your teeth into. We also love hearing from you, so if you have a show topic you want me to cover, email me at craig@canadaehx.com or stop by my website and social media. I'll include all of those links in the show notes.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.